Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
This is Prime Time on Money FM 89.3. I'm Rachel Kelly, and in this weekly segment, we speak to BBC journalists about some of the stories that will be making the headlines in the week ahead. Today, we welcome back BBC broadcast journalist Peter Ross. Pete, great to have you with us again.
Great to be back, Rachel. Thanks for having me.
So, Pete, let's begin, as is now customary, with the latest on the pandemic. Can you give us an update on what you're seeing this week?
Absolutely. I think international focus remains on India. Over the weekend, India recorded its highest daily coronavirus death toll since the pandemic began. We've been seeing figures surging in recent weeks, haven't we? And over the weekend, it became the first country to register more than 400,000 cases in a single day. Limited oxygen supply continues to be a big issue there. India's appealing for help internationally with that, but also its own top court has told its own government that it has to ensure better oxygen supplies in the capital, Delhi, where the situation is particularly severe. I think, though, with what's going on in India, it's internationally a sort of contrasting picture, isn't it? Because you have other countries that are continuing to do well as they grapple with the virus. The UK is certainly one of those countries. The numbers here, as I've told you, the last couple of times we've connected, the numbers have been heading in the right direction. Deaths down, the number of people going into hospital, and our vaccinations, continue apace. I think we're now into the 40s and above. So now countries like the UK and other countries that are beginning to get a handle on the virus perhaps got more capacity to help other countries like India that are struggling. So today the UK says that it'll be sending 1,000 ventilators to India. Taiwan over the weekend announced that its first batch of aid. So that's really it, I think. The other thing on the India front is you've got Australia. Of course, people want to help India, but also concerned about, strong or new strains of the virus entering their country. So we're beginning to see travel bans, and a temporary travel ban between India and Australia begins today. The thing that really stood out from that story for me was very severe penalties if you were to break it. So 5 years in prison if you try to get back into Australia from India.
And hefty fines as well, Pete.
Hefty fines as well. So, we can understand the concerns about transmitting the virus and bringing it from one country to another. But yes, that's really punching through the headlines today, that up to 5 years in prison and very, very large fines as well.
And Pete, while COVID is still dominating the headlines mostly globally, it doesn't seem to be the case in the UK. And let's move from COVID to curtains, because it's the Prime Minister's curtains that have been on the front pages in the UK. Can you tell us more about that?
Absolutely. And I think this has got a little bit to do with the fact that we are doing quite well with the coronavirus. Now, we've had a couple of weeks of loosened restrictions. Many of us have now had the opportunity to have a haircut or maybe meet some friends in the pub for a pint. But yes, supporters of the Prime Minister would say, look, this is simply a brouhaha over nothing. However, critics would say, no, this has got more to do than the Prime Minister and his curtains. This is about the honesty and integrity of the Prime Minister. Now, for those of you that have not been following the story, very quickly, when the Prime Minister enters Downing Street for the first time to take up residence there, they're allowed to decorate their flat where they'll be living as they see fit. They're given a budget to do this, about £30,000.
Okay.
When Mr. Johnson arrived, he decided that budget wasn't sufficient to decorate the apartment in the way that he would have liked, so he needed more money. Now, the issue at the moment is that Mr. Johnson says the excess money, and we don't know an exact figure, I at one point heard it was as much as £200,000. I think now it's being quite widely reported it was about £58,000. Still a very large sum of money.
That's no short change, Pete.
Yeah, exactly. But he said, Mr. Johnson said, look, I've paid that money, but the issue is all around when did he pay that money? Because opponents of Mr. Johnson say that money came from Conservative Party donations. And, of course, there's a conflict of interest if you allow someone to lend you a very large amount of money. Now, the other thing about this is that Mr. Johnson has, had his brushes with honesty, shall we say, before. In fact, you could say that he sort of operates in a slightly different political atmosphere than other politicians. The public perhaps lets him get away with more than they might others. However, the stakes are really high this time. He's not the London mayor. He's not the foreign secretary. He is the prime minister of the country. And while he has been a bit Teflon, you know, a bit resistant to previous scandals, and I could list some for you here now if we had the time, while he's been resistant to those in the past, this scandal really doesn't seem to be going away. And just this morning, the leader of the Conservative Party in Scotland, where there are majorly important elections we're going to be talking about in a moment this week, he's come out and said that if Boris Johnson is found to have broken government rules, then he should resign. And that's one of the strongest statements from a senior Conservative, member of the Conservative Party that we've heard so far, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, Pete, this is timely. In the UK, a slew of elections will be held across England, Scotland and Wales on Thursday. Can you tell us a little bit more about the significance?
Absolutely. I wouldn't normally join you to talk about the big international stories and draw your attention to local elections. However, the outcome of these elections could have serious ramifications for the future of the makeup of the UK. Now, on the one hand, it's very fair to say that I'm sure for most voters, coronavirus and the way it's being handled or has been handled is the most important issue. However, if you were to go to Scotland, the issue of independence, mm-hmm. I think, would be the issue on most voters' lips. Now, Rachel, you know, you might be thinking, Peter, come on, didn't Scotland have a big referendum, a once-in-a-generation referendum on that issue not so very long ago? And you would be right. Back in 2014, the nation voted 52-48 to remain as part of the UK. Now, at the time, politicians on both sides of the divide did say, look, this was a once-in-a-lifetime vote. However, there's one big thing. One issue, the reason that this issue perhaps hasn't gone away is that the Scottish National Party has remained in power and has been in power in Scotland since 2007. And their main, you know, issue that they exist on is gaining independence for Scotland. So, coupled with that long time they've been in power, also in the last 18 months, for the first time ever, a succession of polls showed a majority, for the first time, a majority of Scots want to leave the UK. So all of that and the continued pressure of, you know, how well did the Conservative government do with COVID, plus, you know, Boris Johnson's, you know, own private affairs. He's a very divisive figure in Scotland. You could see some, pretty seismic results. If the Scottish government wins a mandate, wins a majority, it will say it has a mandate to seek another referendum. And that would be very big news.
We're speaking with Peter Ross, BBC broadcast journalist. Now, Peter, moving on, the UK will also host the first in-person G7 Foreign and Development Ministers meeting for 2 years in London. Ministers are arriving today with meetings on Tuesday and Wednesday. Can you tell us what's likely to be on the agenda this week?
Yeah, face-to-face international diplomacy seems to be slowly emerging from the pandemic. You know, politicians of the world, much just like you and I and the listeners there at home, have had to get used to working remotely, mm-hmm. conducting, you know, our business on Zoom, Zoom calls, and of course other video in conferencing softwares are available. But just like, you know, we've had to get used to it, politicians now, they're getting back into rooms, and this is one of the first examples. There's going to be lots on the agenda. I imagine equitable vaccine access would be very high up there, but also on the press release they say global girls' education targets and also discussing new measures to prevent famine and food insecurity. Now, it's not just the G7 that are joining, which, of course, I'm sure you know, is Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, mm-hmm. US and the United Kingdom, but also, that idea of getting people into a room. There's going to be representatives from India, Australia, South Korea and South Africa as well.
Now, Pete, US Secretary of State Antony Blinken will also attend. What can we expect from him?
That's right. We've learned this morning that he's already here. He's going to be meeting with our Foreign Secretary, Dominic Raab, ahead of the summit. I think this really just points to, you know, and I think we talked about this the last time we connected, America's reemergence onto the world stage. Mm. If the previous administration was America first, well, you know, now America is wanting to take its place as the world leader, as it were, as the world superpower. And Mr. Blinken arriving here in London to hold talks with Dominic Raab, there's likely to be lots on the agenda, but firming up that special relationship, as we like to refer to it here in the UK. But also, I'm sure, very high on the agenda will be the situation in Ukraine. Mr. Blinken is going to be travelling to the Ukraine after leaving London. And, of course, you'll remember there has been a big build-up of Russian troops on the border there. Russia said last month that it would withdraw many of those troops, but it set itself a deadline. If those troops have not been removed by the deadline, which is this week, you know, that meeting of Blinken in the Ukraine, you know, particular focus will, you know, will turn to that, of course.
Well, Pete, thank you so much for sharing all of those updates with us today. It's wonderful to have you back on the show.
Thanks, Rachel.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Peter Ross, broadcast journalist at the BBC. This is Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.